Do you get a response out of Larry?
Radio.
Oh. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Tuesday night open call. It is the 25th of February of 2014. It's hard to believe we're wrapping up the end of the second month already in this year. I don't know where the time's gone, but we're having fun while we're going down this road. Jesse, throw it over to you for a disclaimer, and then we can go to good news. So if anybody's got good news, hit 1 on the keypad of your phone, please, and that'll get you in the queue.
Guys, good evening, everybody. Welcome, and thank you for joining us. Again, tonight we will be discussing tons of legal information and having lots of fun doing so in legal situations such as my non-trial yesterday, stuff like that. But again, none of this is intended to be or should be taken as legal advice because we're not attorneys. We don't want to be attorneys. We don't purport to attorneys, and we don't pretend to be attorneys. If you want legal advice, we actually urge you, go see an attorney. Just make sure it's a good one, and he knows what the hell they're doing, because most of them actually don't, which is funny enough. But anyway, again, legal information is never the same as legal advice, and we're going to have a lot of fun discussing legal information. So, again, legal advice, not here. Can't find it. Don't even know how to do it. So, Dave, turn it over to you and go over the program, explain all the one up and one down and all that other stuff so everybody kind of remembers,
yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep, a little reminder for everybody because we are on the Blog Talk system now, and, you know, we use TalkShoe for a long time. The way Blog Talk works is if you have good news at this point in time, I ask you to hit the 1 key, just 1. There's nothing else that's necessary, just the 1 key. That'll put you in the queue so that we can call on you for good news and good news only at this time. When we get done with the good news and any announcements, then I will ask people to hit the 1 key for Q&A. But right now we are not doing Q&A, so if you don't have good news, please refrain from hitting the 1 key, except for Jeff. Jeff needs to hit the 1 key so it puts him in the group up at the top here so that I can keep track of you, because this board is a little different here. It is a little more interesting to try and keep track of everybody. So if anybody has got good news for us tonight, that's going to be hitting the 1 key on your phone system, and we will get to the Q&A as soon as we get done with our announcements and our good news. Jesse, you've got some good news, so why don't we start with you?
Yeah, well, I've had a lot of good news lately with the wife and all that good stuff. Anyway, my good news is this. If some of you guys might recall, I posted it up on the forum today that I had dealing with a debt collector trying to collect a debt, an alleged debt from Chase last year, and it settled for $3,500. And if you remember me last week saying, I think it was the week of the 14th is when I got the letter, that I got the letter from the debt collector trying to collect the same exact debt from the same exact debt collector. Remember me saying that? My wife got that?
Yeah.
Well, today I got the settlement for $3,500 again. So they paid $7,000 over the same damn letter. So Mama's up to $15,500 for the month. She's not too happy or too sad about that, I can promise you.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that would work. I'll bet Danny is just grinning from ear to ear.
Yeah, because when I opened the letter, I said, well, here's another $3,500. She goes, no, come on, it can't be that easy. I said, just walk. Hey, well, there it is, $3,500. So check will be here Friday. That's as hard
amazing.
As it is, guys. I know it sounds crazy to you, but that's literally as hard as it is. It really is not much harder. You just have to know what the heck to say and when to say it and when to recognize the debt. Because remember, a lot of you might think, well, wait a minute, how can they violate? Not only did they violate the FDCPA and SCCPA, which is the basis of the original lawsuit, they violated the settlement agreement. So actually, the threat was, you know what, not only have you violated the FDCPA, the FCCPA, but maybe a little punitive damages from a jury trial will do you some good and help you remember not to send the same letter over to the same guy you've already settled with. So, needless to say, the attorney, I guess, was babbling today, just trying to get this thing done. You know, like bubbling. He didn't know what the hell to say. You know.
Well, what can you say at a time like that?
Not a whole lot.
Other than,
you just can't.
You know, when do you want the check?
Yeah.
Or do you want it wired?
Yeah, exactly. You know, the other thing is I went to trial yesterday on a rental property, which is going to be my third trial. Some of you also that are regular listeners remember this. It turned out our trial was set for 1:30. They had set it for 5 minutes, which was absolutely ridiculous. But they always do because that's the other side. They're used to the non-defendants, you know, no litigation whatsoever. You show up, rubber stamp it, and off you go. So, yeah, that takes all of 5 minutes, you know. Well, apparently there was some kind of bad wreck down on a turnpike yesterday with some fatalities at about 11:30 in the morning. So the attorneys were stuck down there on the other side, and they couldn't make it up. Now, again, this situation is the attorneys got hit with an LOP, the other side, lack of prosecution, because they haven't done anything for over a year. And rather than do what they're supposed to do, they rushed this thing to trial. Oh, yeah, set it for trial. And what they don't realize is they have unanswered discovery. And in that discovery, and this is some of the stuff we're going to talk about in the inner circle, our little roundtable thing that we got going. When you do discovery, some of you might have said, and this is the natural response even from an attorney, is, wait a minute, we can't go to trial because we're still in the middle of discovery. Well, remember, some of the requests for production and discovery and inspection was the inspection of the note, inspection of this original mortgage, inspection of the assignments, the originals. I wanted to inspect those. That's part of the request for production. Well, they never produced those. So the part of the attack yesterday was to do the motion in limine to be heard prior to starting the trial. Why? The motion in limine is just saying, listen, we have to exclude anything and everything that they haven't produced from discovery because it wasn't produced. Otherwise, we can't go to trial. Right? You're in the middle of discovery. They can't have a summary judgment. They can't have a trial. So you do the motion in limine, and what's that do? That just excluded the note from being put into evidence. Sorry, no note, no foreclosure. Have a good day. No assignment, have a good day. That was just part of the strategy. But anyway, we never got there. So there's a lot of issues, but those are the little tricks that we were hoping for. I think that was going to be, you know, done number one. Then, of course, we were going to ask their witness, their, you know, testimony. There's a new case here in Florida, guys. I don't know, Larry, have you seen that case that just came out on these robo-testifiers here in Florida?
Not that I know of, no.
Oh, it's pretty good. Let me grab it, just because this is something I think everybody should know. This kind of goes through some of those cases I've read before up in Tennessee that basically talks about this and addresses a little education here, David, for a few minutes.
Well, sure, absolutely. That's valuable
stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is from the 3rd DCA, which is about the only
And when you say DCA, what you mean is District Court of Appeals.
Yes. This is an appeal on a motion for rehearing and partial concession of error, yada, yada, yada. So, the appeal comes from us. And the name of the case, in case you guys want to look it up, is, well, you won't be able to get this. But it's Terrence, and the last name is K-E-L-S-E-Y, versus
Kelsey.
SunTrust Mortgage. Kelsey, yeah. Versus SunTrust Mortgage, Inc. And basically what it says is, we grant the appellee's motion for rehearing, withdrawal from the former opinion dated December 4th of 13, and substitute the following. The appeal comes from us on a final default judgment ordered in foreclosure of the Kelsey's home in favor of SunTrust Mortgage, Inc. Although the Kelsey's have raised several points of error on appeal, we address only one. And based on SunTrust's proper concession of error, we reverse and remand for further proceedings. At trial, SunTrust's only testifying witness was Lauren Gegerseff, at a mediation litigation specialist employed by nobody other than Nation Star Mortgage. Gegerseff testified that she had no independent knowledge of the loan. Why did she testify to that, guys? Because she was asked the correct questions. Remember that. She had only seen the subject note for the first time the day of trial, and she had only become familiar with the mortgage file when she learned the case was being tried. See, these are professional litigators that they hire, you know, what they call us. Gegerseff also relied on a proposed final order that had been prepared by a third party to testify regarding the amount owing on the note at the time of the foreclosure. The Kelsey objected to Gegerseff's authentication of the note, mortgage, and other documents because she lacked the requisite foundation, and she was incompetent to testify because her purported knowledge was based entirely on out-of-court documents that had not made been available for inspection. Footnote says NationStar began servicing Kelsey's loan and mortgage after a modification agreement had allegedly been reached with SunTrust, the original loan servicer, and which were hearsay. The trial court overruled the objections, allowed Gregorseth to testify, and admitted the note and mortgage into evidence. Remember what we did at our last trial? We precluded the note out of evidence. And then the trial right after that, we precluded the witness from testifying because she was from BOA. She had no damn prerequisite knowledge on any of this stuff. This is the exact direction we were heading with her. And we won both trials. To establish its entitlement to foreclose, SunTrust needed to introduce the subject note and mortgage, an acceleration letter, and some evidence regarding the Kelsey's outstanding debt and note. Holding the plaintiff's debt. But first, an agreement, a default, an acceleration of the debt to maturity and the amount due. With proper foundation, the documents Gregorseth relied upon were established, or would establish an amount due in the note, were indisputably hearsay and were not properly authenticated. So Kelsey's argue, among other things, that the trial court erred in allowing Gregorseth to authenticate these documents without showing that she was a records custodian or she had personal knowledge of the documents. SunTrust filed a partial concession of error in this court, admitting that the trial court erred in allowing the documents as they are hearsay without proper authentication. We agree and remand for rehearing on the issue, and the Kelsey's remaining arguments either lack merit, were decided on the previous interlocutory appeal, or were rendered moot based on our remand. So it's reversed and remanded. So basically what this is saying for those non-fancy members that are, and non-members alike that don't quite get that, is a third party can't testify to your records. Simple as that. And that's what's happening. Usually, that's what they do. They come in like this BOA, right? This was, I had on the trial we just won in Tampa, that was Countrywide that turned into Bank of America that was serviced by Ocwen. No longer serviced by Ocwen, given back to back BAC Home Loan Servicing, not Bank of America NA. But U.S. Bank was the defendant or the plaintiff. So, again, we were ready to knock her out with the right questions to just put her in her place to let her know, let the court know this person has no prior knowledge of any of these documents. It can't testify, so therefore they can't be admitted. We didn't have to get that far because of a motion in limine we did. So we did a motion in limine prior to. So that's pretty good news for Florida because what they're saying is basically robo-testifiers, no more. That's basically what that says. Because that's just generally what happens. Yeah, that happens here and everywhere else, and it happens a lot in credit card cases. We know that. So, you know, the debt collector.
You're
going
to send that to me,
the
right?
Record. Yeah. Well, I'll put it up on the form, but yeah, I'll send it to you. At the end of the day, what happens is when you get to a debt collector's issues, the debt collectors are testifying on the records, on the assignments, on the payments, and all on your credit cards.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't because they're a third party. They cannot testify to those records. Period, end of story. Can't happen. So that's the beauty of it. If you hit them the correct way and you ask them the right questions and you prepare yourself for depositions, et cetera, then you're in gold. You're golden, golden, golden. But if you let it slide, you're not so golden. So
strategy.
There you go. Yeah, it's all strategy, man. You can knock them right in the head. You know, last couple of months have been real good for us. So not only are we beating them, but, you know, when you add the value of the homes that were won at trial, you're looking at about 3.5. And then, you know, add the 15.5 in cash, I'm not complaining. It's been a pretty damn good month. You know, I mean, literally. Yeah, you know, 100.5 on one and about 135 on the other. 185 on the other. I'm not complaining. I got a little bit more fight left with these guys going down the road, but, you know, we've already prepared for that too. So think about that, guys. That is a big chunk of change. I know it's not cash, but it's still an asset that can be liquidated down the road if wanted to be. I don't want to because I personally would rather keep it for cash flow. But at the end of the day, anybody here, that could be your personal home rather than a rental property. I'm still fighting on my personal home. I might lose on mine. I don't know. Never know what these judges are going to do. So just that's good news. Always stand firm. Hold your ground. Study, study, study. Learn, learn, learn. And look for all these little weaknesses because they're there. trust me when I tell you that there are more weaknesses in every one of these cases than there are strong points. And that's, I think,
and
everybody on this call.
Yeah, try and think out of the box instead
that's
of
right.
just the same old, same old.
Yeah. Well, we had a member today, I'll tell you, put on the forum. You know, he was asking about the defendant that he sued did a motion to strike the jury trial. And the question at hand is, did they have an assignment? Is there anything that would connect the two? The question, or the answer was no. So he posts his response today and says, oh, look what they responded, that the servicers can hold up. And yes, that's absolutely correct. Those cases are all on par. If you're the servicer, then you're entitled to the non-jury trial. You can bar it. But since there's no connection to that, don't let them sway you. And that's what they do. They throw out this nonsense at you, and you lose focus on the fact that you are filing the motion to strike their strike for jury trial based on the fact that there's no connection and they're not entitled to a benefit from a contract they're not a party to begin with. But somehow they just throw out three cases at the guy, and he just craps his pants. Like, oh, my God, what do I do? What do you mean, what do? You just called yours up for hearing and watched them squirm. Because all you have to say is, you know what, the cases you're under, they've cited, we're absolutely on par. The problem is, and the distinguishing factor is, those cases, they were the servicers. In this case, there's no connection or proof that they are the servicer. So they're not entitled to take benefit of a contract they're not a party of, in any which way, shape, or form. See how simple that is? There's no reason to panic. There's nothing. It's a big smokescreen. Oh, he's a pro se. He's stupid. You know?
They're going to try that every time.
Yeah, every time without fail. And it's up to you to not get nervous, to not, you know, lose focus in sight of the goal. Always stay focused on the goal. Always, 125%. Don't lose sight of it. So there you go. So there's all my good news, a little education, and a little advice. Stay focused. You'll do good in the end.
That is good.
Uh-oh.
Well, the only good news.
Larry must have good news.
Why, what did I do?
You got some good news for us, Larry? You got some more money?
You cough.
Actually, I do.
Go ahead. I've known Larry too many years. I said, you cleared your throat, so I knew you were getting ready to share good news. I called it. I said, he is. Sure as hell, there you are. That's
Leave me alone. I'm not going to tell you my good news. All right, guys. Well, I'm on a TCPA kick, and, you know, for a couple of years, about 2 years, I think, I've been keeping very close track of the calls I've received. And today I contacted both my home phone and cell phone companies to find out about getting my phone records, incoming calls for the last 4 years. So I will have to send out subpoenas, which is fine. It's kind of what I expected. But I do have a case that I can do it in, so that should be going out within the next day or two. But I'm just looking at my list of calls. I've got a spreadsheet. I've got well over 400 calls. Now,
nice.
Not every single one of them is going to be TCPA eligible, but probably somewhere between 90 and 95% of them are. And those aren't even all the calls. You know, occasionally I've missed some. Before 2 years ago, I wasn't even keeping track, really, except in very kind of a haphazard way. So it should be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, that's awesome, man.
Yeah, but I mean, let's say I've got 500 good calls out there. You know, that's a minimum of, holy crap.
Yeah, it's a half a mil, yeah.
Well, that's the middle point. You know, minimum, we're looking at $250,000 for 500 good calls.
That's right. I look at it this way. Most of our listeners and callers don't realize the pile of money they're sitting on. They really have no idea. They think they have an idea. You really, really have most consumers in this country, not just our listeners, not just our members, most consumers in general have a pile of money sitting around in their credit reports, on their cell phone bills, in their mortgage violations. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. I don't think that the system functions without all the violations. It's impossible. It's just too much dishonesty, too much crooked, too much I don't care, or too much ignorance out there. They just don't know the law. Or they do, and they could care less about it. But most of the people have it. I'm going to give you an example. I'm going to give you such a damn good example. It should blow your mind away. And, Larry, you're going to really crack up at this. Tanner, one of the attorneys I work with, I'm the guinea pig with Tanner. Always have been, always will be for you new listeners. We've lost a lot of cases, won a lot of cases, but we know what we can do and can't do because of that, okay? So it's been well invested time, money, and energy, okay? And yesterday I'm talking to Tanner. He says, Jess, did I tell you that I'm in foreclosure on three of my personal homes? I said, what do you mean? He said, I haven't missed a payment. I've never been late one day, and I got all my records. I said, well, how the hell are you in foreclosure? He says, because when they switched servicers, they lost all the records. They lost them all. So the new servicer just assumed that there was no payment history and started foreclosing on me on three of his rental properties.
Boy.
I said, really?
Man.
He says, oh, yeah. He says, I'm going to let them keep going. And then I'm going to negotiate my interest rates from 7.5 to 3. Because that's his goal. So here's an attorney. Here is an actual foreclosure defense expert. Expert. Probably one of the best guys in the state of Florida. Period. And he's being foreclosed upon by an error that a servicer made. So my point is this. When I asked him, I said, well, Tanner, have you checked your credit? He goes, by golly, you got to know Tanner. By golly, you're right. I didn't think about that. I said, you better dispute it. I said, you want me to write you some dispute letters and email them to you so you can send them out there because you're missing out on $3,000 a month? He says, man, I can't believe it. I got a pile of money sitting there. I said, you sure do. See, even an attorney who does consumer defense doesn't look at all the angles. And he's damn good. Like I said, I'd put my money on Tanner. I'd perform almost any attorney in the state of Florida when it comes to foreclosures. On anything else, too, by the way. He's just sharp. The guy's just sharp as hell. So my point is, here's an attorney who doesn't even realize it. So, Larry, there you go. Credit guy, he didn't even consider looking at his credit. He just forgot all about it. He said, I bet you it's in the dumps. I said, I bet you it is. You got three damn foreclosures being reported to your credit report now. So there you go. Even an attorney doesn't even get it. Just missed it.
Wow. That's
yeah,
just amazing.
Pretty amazing,
I mean,
man. Yeah.
Well,
yeah, really
we talk about the stupidity of these people out here, and it just shows on a regular day-to-day basis. I mean, there's no question about it. Well, Larry, you've got a big chunk of money sitting there. And
yeah,
when
now
do you plan
keep
on, when are you going to start collecting it?
Well, that's the thing. It's going to take me. I mean, I'm looking at probably 6 to 8 hours of work on this thing to collect anywhere from $250,000 to $750,000. So, yeah, I'm going to have to apply myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
For a couple of days anyway, right?
Yeah. You
yeah.
Notice,
I mean,
everybody,
you know.
I just want to reiterate that Larry didn't say 68 hours, 6-8.
6-2-8
six
hours.
It's 6-8
yeah.
hours for that money.
Yeah, I mean, that's just to prepare. You know, I need to clean up the list. I need to filter out the ones that aren't any good. I need to, you know, count up the various violations. I need to figure out where statute of limitations issues are and figure out who to start with, that sort of thing. But
you need to, like, set some of them up and, you know, just let them continue this stuff so that the STB
right.
can come in handy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Now, I know if somebody hasn't called me in a year or two, then they've stopped. So, you know,
well,
those are
you know
the ones
that,
I'll go after.
Do you know that big one I got going on right now? They never called me. I didn't even know about them or who they were. There they are putting all this stuff in my credit report, all three credit reports, two different accounts, and they never contacted me or made any effort to until I disputed with the credit reporting agencies and debt validated them. And then they could not hold themselves back from violating me in every way they could dream up.
Well, it's out here. That's just like my situation. I have on I've got 253 calls that I can litigate on my cell phone right now, and I got three more today. That means just the one collector that called the three times today is up to 82 calls. And that's the same phone that Midland called 110 times. And others.
Yeah, that's quite what I was trying to get at. You know, once Larry starts, you know, he gets it organized and he does his disputes and stuff, you jangle their chain a little And sometimes they take that chain and try to run with it.
Yeah. Well, Larry's stuff is all phone calls that he's got. That wasn't anything out of credit reports. That's all phone calls.
Oh, I see. Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I don't even know
Gary,
if any of these are
evening,
collection
Gary.
Agencies. I pretty well have already filtered those out. We're talking just generic sales calls and junk
yeah.
like that.
Larry, don't forget Section C also of the TCPA, which can actually double those. So instead of $500 per call, it could be $1,000, or instead of $1,500 per call, it could be $3,000 per call.
Yeah,
so
that's,
bear that
yeah.
in mind.
C5,
oh, I won't.
Right, for the do not call.
Yeah, I know your cheap butt won't forget, but I'm just reminding you, you know, you can't let it slide.
Thanks.
We don't.
Well,
you know it's all in
well,
love, buddy. You know.
Yeah,
we're all that
but,
way.
You know,
and listen, you guys that are listening don't, you know, some of you don't comprehend it or don't believe it or don't, you know. At the end of the day, there's a ton of money. A ton of money. Dave has $250,000 sitting around. Larry has $500,000 sitting around. It's ridiculous. You understand.
It's ridiculous,
that,
but I'll take it. And they keep calling.
Yeah, no, but I mean, it's ridiculous that, you know, Dave, you have all this money laying around. Larry has all this money around. I got a couple of $100,000 in cases laying around that are already filed. I'm not waiting. NationStar owes me $175,000.
Oh,
I mean,
you know what?
Everybody on this call, Terry, how much would $175,000 change your life tomorrow?
Oh, like completely.
Okay, and I don't think there's anybody on this call that wouldn't change your life completely. Larry, how would it change your life? You're not broke. You know, I mean, this is serious stuff. This is life-changing events. You just have to go out and change it down.
I found out today what Pacer does when you don't pay the bill.
Yeah, shut your ass off.
No. Guess who they send it to?
Oh, no.
NCO.
Nice.
Yeah, my neighbor came over and handed me a dunning letter from NCO on his past due Pacer bill today.
Oh,
of course,
humor.
I looked at him and I said, and you want to tell me why you didn't pay your Pacer bill?
Yeah.
Why you let it go this far?
Yeah. It's very serious stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, we take it serious.
Yeah.
I know
yeah.
our moderators take this stuff very serious. It's not fun and games. There's a lot of money there to be made. It sure changes a lot of people's lives. It sure has changed me and my life, and it sure has changed a lot of my listeners and a lot of the members and a lot of people who were following the system long before What Lies in Your Debt was ever even in existence that we helped right here in Florida face-to-face. Thousands. And it's just something that I'm very proud of. But unless you take the initiative – and make a little effort, put in a little effort to make this happen, it's not going to happen. You can sit there and grumble all you want. You can sit there and grumble and poorness and stress, and you don't need any of that. You just don't know how much money's sitting around. I mean, you just don't know because you're not tearing into your credit reports. You're not tearing into these letters when they come in the mail. You're not. And it's
looking
all
at your caller ID.
Yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous. I have like 60 calls already from Iberia Bank. You know, every one of them is going to be $2,500, $3,500. Every one of them. I could care less. I'm going to just beat them down. And here's the beautiful thing. At the trial yesterday, I'm looking at Iberia's attorneys right there. Right, I'm looking right at her face, talking to her. She says, oh, I got to catch a flight at 3 o'clock. I ain't going to wait around for the next. Because she is a party to that lawsuit. See, they had my second on the house used to be with a bank that went under that Iberia Bank allegedly took over. They have a judgment. They already have a judgment. So what are they doing there trying to collect more? You already have a judgment. But I didn't say anything to her. I was very pleasant to her, very nice to her, you know. And I'm looking at her going, lady, I am going to drop the ball on you so hard you have no clue what's going to hit you. But I'm not going to let her know. You know, but there's another $65,000, $70,000 that's sitting there.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of money out here. I'm in the process of negotiating a settlement right now with an attorney. We're going back and forth, and I expect to get a dollar figure from them, offer of settlement tomorrow on 22 calls. So, you know, we'll see what happens with that. But for everybody out there, you can tell by the conversation here, we're doing it. If you're not bringing the money in, my question is, why? You know, there's violations out there. You got to go get them. They aren't going to jump in your lap and just say, well, here's a check. You do have to do just a little bit of work to get that money, but especially with TCPA, it is not that difficult at all. So, but we need to move forward with our good news here. Unless if we got any of our other mods, John or Jeff, you guys got any good news?
I don't see anybody else's hand raised either.
Nope.
So.
Oh yeah, we've got some. Hands raised here, so let's go to 765 and see if we've got some good news there. 765, you got good news for us? 765, you were just unmuted. Do you got to give us some good news, or we're going to move down the list?
No, I'll
All right.
wait for the questions.
All right, we're going to wait for the questions there. 773.
Hello?
You have some good news for us.
Okay, is that me?
You were just unmuted. You got some good news?
Okay, I didn't know. No, I don't have any good news. I have some excellent news.
Well, we'll take excellent news.
Hey, okay, listen, guys, this is going to really blow you guys' mind. If you guys can remember, a couple of weeks ago I called in. I had my wife on the phone with me, and we went to court. And the other side, we're suing the law firm, debt collector. We're suing the law office and also the owner of the law office out of Anaheim, California. And we're the ones that were telling you about the other side filed a motion for an enlargement of time, and they didn't show up for that. And you guys mentioned about that was at the discretion of the judge since they didn't show up. Well, come to find out.
Yeah, we remember that.
Right. Okay, well, comes to find out, it's at the discretion of the judge when they are there, not when they didn't show up. So let me tell you what happened. So they gave them the 21 days anyway. And they filed their on the 21st day on Valentine's Day, on the 14th. We went to court on the 20th, and they still did not show up for the status hearing. The judge looked. He was blown away, and this is what's happening right now. He said that he's going to do this. He asked my wife what's a good day for her. He made everything convenient for her. We're going back to court on March 4th. For them to show cause as to why they should not be sanctioned and why they should not get a judgment default against them. That day, the attorney, female attorney, called my wife on our home phone, left from recording, apologizing for not appearing in court. We was blown away, like, why is she calling us to apologize that she didn't show up? So she said that they would be hearing from her real soon. Well, she called the very next day saying that her client tripled the offer. Triple the offer. Now get this. Here's what the deal is. It was only two calls to her cell phone a couple of years ago, and two calls to her home phone, leaving a automatic telephone dialing system message. Now get this. I played poker with her. She called us one day. She said, "Well, she denied everything on the complaint. She denied that they ever called." She denied that they ever called the cell phone. They denied they ever called the house phone. So this is how I played poker with her. She said, well, we don't have anything showing that automatic telephone dialing system or anything that was left on your house phone or cell phone or anything. I said, I tell you what I'm going to do, ma'am. I'm going to do you a favor. I'm going to play just one of those recordings. Well, guess what, guys? I only had one of the recordings.
I knew that was coming.
and listen to this. And it was on my house phone. So I said, okay, I'm going to let you hear it. It says, this is a message from the law office of blank, 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 a debt collector, blah, blah, blah. And you could literally see her mouth drop on the phone. Well, listen to this. She called and she told us that her client came up with another offer. And on her recording, she said, this is something I think and hope that you will like. Well, keep in mind, it was only two calls to the cell phone. It was two calls to the house phone. So really, she thinks she's only did like four calls. Well, we're looking at settling for $9,000.
Yeah.
So wow. We're letting them sweat right now. She
That's
wants to know
awesome,
when
man.
Can we get back to her. Because they gotta go, we gotta go to court Tuesday, and they have to show cause to this judge as to why they should not have a default judgment against them, and why they should not be sanctioned. And there's no way, nothing they can say or do to make the judge realize that they shouldn't get sanctioned or have a default judgment. So with that being said, I want to ask you guys a serious question. And because it's kind of putting, we're not behind a ball or hard wall or anything. What would you guys do in a case like that when I get a deep down feeling this judge is going to possibly give a default judgment. The default judgment was for $15,000. I just took a shot out in the dark to play with it. So
here's what I would do. Okay, here's what I would do. This is Jesse. If it was me, I'd tell her, listen, if your client is serious about settling for $9,000, you know that this judge is not happy with you guys. On top of the $9,000, he's probably going to add some sanctions, give you default, or give me the default, add sanctions to you, yada, yada, yada. If you can have the check within 48 hours to me, I'll do a dismissal on the case. You're happy. You don't even have to go to the hearing. You don't have to get beat up. It's been settled, but you got to give me a check for $9,000 plus my court costs.
Yeah, I was going to say for plus to $400, right?
Yeah, so $9,500.
I agree
with
you.
Within 48 hours, you do that, and I'll cancel that hearing. Not cancel the hearing. I will file a notice of dismissal, stipulation of settlement. It's a done deal. So that way you don't have to go get beat up. How's that?
Yeah, because he was doing the case before my wife, and this was a case that was dealing with Comcast and so forth, and they violated two of his orders, and he was not nice about it. So I know what this guy is about when somebody violated his orders. So it's going to be ugly. But this is what I want to ask you guys real quick here, guys. Now, if we take this settlement, which I'm sure we're going to do, because, I mean, $9,000 for two calls, really, is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
here's the deal. Is it possible if we take this settlement and the judge would still say, because he still wants them to come in and say why they violated his order, because they did it twice. And is it possible that this judge would give us a default judgment regardless of the settlement?
No, he can't. Not if you settle it. There's nothing to give you anymore.
No.
That's what I thought. Okay. But we're satisfied with the $9,400, man. I got no problem with that. But I just want them to sweat for a couple of days. So we're going to call
them. I agree
we're
with
them. We're going to call them tomorrow and let them know that we're okay.
Take the money and run.
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt. Without a doubt. Okay, well, that's my good news, guys, or my excellent news.
Hey, that's great. That's awesome. Good job.
Two calls to the house phone, two calls to the cell phone, and we only got proof of one call, and I let her hear the voice message, and that she called my bluff, and next thing you know, they tripled the offer.
Yep.
That's right.
Good
that's
deal.
Awesome, man.
All right, we got to keep moving.
Thanks very much. Thank you.
And that's great. I'd like to get payday like that.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
That's all right. I got some good stuff coming.
Any day.
All right, we're going to go to 702 for good news. Hello, 702. We can't hear you if you're talking.
Dave, is that me?
If you're unmuted,
that's you.
You got some good news for us?
Well, no. I
you jumped the gun.
Ask a question.
Yeah, all right.
Okay,
we got to put you back in the bunch. We're doing good news. All right, let's go to 808 for good news.
Aloha, this is Mary. I don't have good news, so I guess I have to go back in the queue.
All right, thank you. All right, we're going to try another one here. 360 for good news. Good news.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Good.
You have some good news for us?
I do. Dave, up here in Washington State, I had that Capital One case a couple weeks ago that took me to the MDL, and they kept remanding all my cases that I filed in the lower court there in small claims.
Right.
So, I had three attorneys. Well, just to reiterate for some of the new folks, I went ahead and did some TCPA calls. Capital One had a firm in Seattle remanded up, and then unbeknownst to Capital One, the two tag teams doing the MDL and then remanding up to the federal court in my district, they had another team suing me. So I called the lady up in Chicago, and I told her that we're going to have a case each week, one at a time, because they got 48 other calls. And I figured it's going to cost you about $1,000 to remand that up with all the attorney fees you're going to be paying, and not to mention all my other claims I'm going to file. So if you want to spend $48,000 to give away $30,000, I guess you're stupid. So we had a little conversation, and then we just wound up settling. So they didn't want to have to do that. So right now we're under negotiations, and I said they had no idea that the other outfit, Settle and Hammer, were suing me up here in Washington. So they dropped the suit. They took care of everything. I didn't really want them to get rid of my debt on the credit report. Some people might think that's strange, but they decided to get rid of that, plus give me a nice chunk of change. So that's
they
my
want
game,
to
man.
Get rid of you.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing, exactly. And so in the settlement agreement, it says we're going to tell the credit reporting agencies to get rid of this debt. But if they don't, just call us and we'll tell them again. And I guess that's kind of good, because if they don't get rid of it, I can just set them up for a little party.
That's right.
Later on down the road. So I'm sitting pretty good. I had several cases in the federal court, MDL. I had people suing me. And now it's all being taken care of, and now I'm getting a chunky change. So now I can focus all my energies on Bank of America right now. That's my house suit. So
that's an interesting strategy that you used there, with that being in an MDL, and you just started hitting them one at a time in the small claims.
Yeah, I mean, I use the language here to stress a point, but basically I just tell them, you know, I'm going to hammer your ass if you're going to play hardball. And so if you want to play that game, I'm going to play the game too, and you're going to pay. And you know what? I told them, I don't care if I don't get one dime. You're paying $48,000 plus, and I got a big, huge case that I can take all the files you send me. That's just what I said. So, and they said, well, okay, well, we don't want to do that. And I said, I didn't think so.
Well,
that was pretty nice, though. I was pretty nice to all those new listeners. I was real nice at the beginning. And then when they just didn't want to do it, that's what you got to do sometimes.
Right.
So.
Well, that's an interesting strategy, and I'll keep that in mind, because I've got somebody I'm going to be dealing with on an MDL, and that might be an interesting strategy to approach to be able to litigate on that. So, thanks
my
very
friend,
much. You did great on that.
That's right.
Thanks.
Good strategy.
Yeah. Well, just one last thing. The same thing. My friend, who I'm partnering with on the website, he's dealing with Midland. And he filed one TCPA, and they took it up to the same district court, because we're in the same district court, and now he's going to do the same thing. So I'm very interested to see how that works out.
Well,
I'll let you know how that worked out, too.
Right, and I've got 110 calls with Midland myself.
Oh, they're
going to
love that.
Yeah.
They want to spend $110,000. So.
Yeah.
I still got five I can bring back in.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Well, very good. That's a very interesting strategy. By all means, let us know how that goes, okay?
All right. Thanks.
All righty. Thank you. Okay. We're going to jump to a couple more here real quick and see if there's good news. If not, then we're going to jump over to our Q&A. 602, you've been unmuted. You got good news?
No, I don't. Actually, I have a question,
and
I'm going to have to go back into queue.
Yeah, okay. Okay, I tell you what, I think we probably caught everybody that we've got, according to what I see on the board, that had good news. If anybody else has got it, they can bring it while we're in Q&A. At this point in time, you can hit the one key on the keypad on your phone. That'll put you in the queue for Q&A, and let's start rock and rolling. Jesse, we've got an hour and 16 minutes, so we're going to want to be short, sweet, and to the point, and not a bunch of extra talking. So I got to rein Jesse in so he doesn't get overly verbose here. See, I can do that, because I'm a long ways from him. He can't do anything to me.
Bad,
all right, let's go to 817 for Q&A. 817, that's down the Fort Worth area.
Hey, that's me.
Good evening.
Hey, it's Keisha.
Yeah,
hi,
we
Keisha.
Know who it is. How you doing, pretty?
I'm
we know
good.
That voice, don't we, David?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, y'all should. I have a question. My friend is looking right now. She's looking at buying a foreclosed house. And she put an offer in on the home, and the bank basically they said they'll come back in 2 days, but she did the asking price basically for what they wanted with the foreclosure. So what I wanted to know is if she does do that, would it be beneficial for her to right at that point, you know, wait for her to close, go down and do the public records, and then start with because obviously that title is going to be clouded. So that she can tell
why do you think it's going to be clouded?
Well, I'm just saying with the, you know how usually with the foreclosures, they're going to have, you know, a lot of little issues there where it maybe have been a MERS and they've set aside the mortgage. So I don't really have all the details yet, but I'm just wondering, you know, once I'll find out a little more in a couple of days, you know, because she was looking at getting the answer back. So if they do come back with it, then she's going to go forward with it. But I didn't know.
Yeah.
Just with it being a foreclosure, like, you know, I mean.
Well, here's,
so we
yeah, here's the problem
thing.
That we have, right?
Uh-huh.
The problem that you have in today's market, no matter what. And I think that the courts recognize this, and they have recognized in the past, and part of the recognition is actually ruling against us and not for MERS. Informers,
okay.
Because they realize that most of these properties are going to be passed along with bad titles, right? Think about
right.
it. There's no way MERS could file a satisfaction of mortgage on behalf of anybody. Impossible.
Right, right.
Right? So if that's the case, there's not a whole lot she can do. She either buys that property and takes that risk or not. It's just that
okay.
simple. I mean,
okay.
there's not much choice. Most of Americans right now are pretty screwed. And that's the beautiful thing about the foreclosure buy and sell, which I used to do a ton of. Right now, if I were to buy a foreclosed home, right, on a short sale or whatever the case is, and it has a MERS title to it, I'll go ahead and take it. And then I'm going to go
okay.
ahead and challenge it.
Okay.
You see what I mean?
Yes. Yes.
So
that's
now I can take, yeah, I can
to.
Take my title company. I can, Keisha, listen, I can take the title company to task now. Real
okay.
quick, you follow? Because
yep.
it's insured, correct? Now,
yes.
some of them have went as far as to not insure anything that was a MERS mortgage.
Oh.
They don't issue policies on those, a lot of them. So, you know, there's a lot going on with MERS, but again, it's, you know, risk-reward. That's really all it boils down to, like any business, you know?
Right, but we'll get more into that once the roundtable goes, right? So I can be
exactly.
Okay,
exactly.
That'll help. Okay. All right, well, I'm excited. So I'll go back in the queue, let somebody else go, and I'll ask my other question then.
All right, sweetie.
Okay,
alrighty.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, let's go to 410.
Hello.
Good
Hello.
Evening.
Jesse and everyone, I'm in federal court right now,
okay.
and I'm fighting FDCPA with Wells
yeah.
Fargo, who was the original servicer. Now, I'm stating that they are a debt collector because they filed this assignment after the alleged debt. And
okay, you lost me there. What do you mean filed an assignment after the alleged debt?
They
that doesn't
filed
make any coherent
okay, my original servicer, my original lender, American Home
okay.
Mortgage, is out of business.
Right.
They went
yeah,
out of business in 2008.
Yeah, yeah the
okay.
same as mine. I'm with you. Okay.
So I was dealing with Wells Fargo as the servicer.
Okay.
Now, I went into default in 2012.
Okay.
Wells Fargo filed the assignment after the default. Which I also put in for Helping Families Save Their Home Act.
Right.
But I filed the FDCPA against them also and saying that Wells Fargo Home Mortgage was who
they are. Correct.
But they are going all around me with this. They even put into the brief that Wells Fargo Bank acquired Wells Fargo Home Mortgage in 2004, and that they're the same entity. How do I get around this argument?
They just sank their own ship, it sounds like to
exactly.
me.
Exactly. Larry, you were going on the same path. What do you?
But
what's your thought, Larry?
They
were on the same path.
But what
can't
they, what
can't use
say,
different names and then say, "Well, we're really the same company."
Think about that.
Yeah, it's specifically prohibited by FDCPA. Now, did you say that Wells Fargo or one of Wells Fargo entities was the original servicer or the servicer
Wells
at the time
Fargo
of the
Home Mortgage was the original servicer?
Okay. I don't
and
think that's what you
said. And the assignment is into Wells Fargo Bank N.A. The attorney has inserted a paper into this record stating that Wells Fargo Home Mortgage was acquired by Wells Fargo Bank back in 2004 and that they're the same entity.
Did they do this as part of a motion to dismiss?
Yes.
All right. That's not going to fly. They're
yeah.
introducing evidence as part of a motion to dismiss, and that's completely improper.
So why wouldn't it fly?
He just
told you
why. They're introducing evidence into a motion to dismiss, and that's improper. That's exactly what Larry just said to you. He
it's
answered
improper.
Your question. Yeah, a motion to dismiss is based on the four corners of the complaint. That's
right.
it. No more, no less. You can't go out there and say, well, look, we had a merger, and we had – that's all for discovery.
Okay.
Was there an affidavit attached, or was it just the rantings of the attorney?
Yeah.
But this judge is going with their rantings.
Well, he can't. What do you mean he's going with them? Has he issued a ruling?
Oh, yes, he did. And I filed a motion to alter or amend his judgment. And I waited about 10 days to see if he was going to do anything. So then I put in a notice of appeal. Well, the appeal court just sent me something yesterday stating that I can appeal, but I need to let the judge rule on the motion, the last motion that I put in.
Okay. Now, did the judge rule on their motion as a motion to dismiss, or did the judge interpret it as a motion for summary judgment and rule on it that way?
He did it as a motion to dismiss, but they did put in for summary judgment, but he didn't do it as summary judgment. He just was trying to dismiss my claim.
Now, you're in federal court, so it's a 12B6 motion. And what he's trying to do is, I think, give you a chance to fix it. That's all usually. See, motions to dismiss, and I think Larry and all the moderators agree, that all that is telling you where you need to correct your complaint. I don't ever look at that as a negative. I'm just like, okay, well, I did this, the judge wants that. I did this, and the judge wants that. That's all. Here's my weak spot.
Yeah.
You told me about it. Thank you.
Now, did the judge give you leave or not?
No, this... Say that again. He did give me leave to amend my complaint. I amended the complaint back. This has been going on since May of last year. I amended the complaint back in September, and it wasn't the way I should have amended it. But I had to put it in at the time that I requested.
Okay. Well, the judge gave you leave to amend. There was no reason to file an appeal. So let that go.
Yeah, let that go. Exactly, Larry. Let that go and file yourself the amended complaint.
Right, and you probably should withdraw that motion.
So that way you can hurry up and file your amended complaint.
Right.
Well, the amended complaint was already there. He never filed on anything. And
what do you mean he never
filed? He never, everything just set. My motion for extension of time. He never responded to anything that I put in. Until
he never ruled on it. You got to use the right terminology. He never ruled on things.
Yeah, judge is not going to respond to anything.
Well, he never
judges
ruled.
Rule on things, right?
Well,
right.
He never ruled anything that any motion that I put in. He never ruled until he did this his order. And in his order, he was trying to find ways to get the trustees, because I took Wells Fargo, the trustee, the law firm, I put all of them in. He found every little way he could possibly find to try to get them out of this loop, especially the trustees although they put false documents into the complaint, their pleading.
Okay.
So,
well, that's all fine, but the bottom line is if he gave you leave to amend, then you need to pay attention to what he said.
Okay. He gave me leave to amend what I already put in, but I came up to
I don't know what,
again.
Wait a minute. I don't understand something here. When did he give you leave to amend? How many days ago?
When he did the order. He said that.
How many days ago?
When did he do the order?
Last month in January.
So you have to take what's in there and amend it according to what it is he wants to see in there.
Well, it's already there. This is what I'm saying.
He wouldn't have dismissed it. You need to read a little closer.
You've got to deal with reality. He dismissed the case. He gave you leave to amend within a certain number of days, right?
And he told you what the faults were.
But he took the amended complaint that was already there.
It doesn't matter. You filed a second amended complaint.
So do another amended complaint?
Yeah. Second amended complaint.
You do.
Yeah.
And he told you exactly what was wrong with your last complaint.
And he told you what's wrong with it, so fix it.
Remember, guys, a negative, everybody looks at a dismissal as a negative, and we've said it over and over for 3 years. It's not a negative. It's a positive.
You have to take it that way.
Change that to federal court, Jesse.
I could take that in any court. A motion
to
amend.
As long as you have leave to amend, it's always.
It's not.
Okay, one at a time, guys.
Very good.
I was saying,
one at a time. Jeff, make your statement, and then if Jesse wants to follow it up.
Right.
Yeah, go.
In my experience in state courts, Jesse, a lot of times a dismissal is not an opportunity. It's slamming you down.
The rules state that if it's dismissed, they generally have to allow you to amend it. Those are the rules. And I don't care what court you're in. So, you know, what state you're in, what court you're in, those are just standard rules. If I made a mistake,
you're pointing out
the mistake, and I get to, you know, correct it. So regardless, that's irrelevant at this point, and it's irrelevant to her. She needs to address what she needs to address, and you're sitting in a good spot. Again, don't take it as a bad, because it's not a bad at all, actually. It's pretty good, I'd say.
The only problem is he gave you a certain number of days to amend, 10 or 20 or whatever.
Yeah.
But you're not listening to what I'm saying. The amended complaint was been sitting there, and this is what he is using.
Okay. All right. Let me see if I can clarify this. I think I understand. It was way last year that you got the opportunity to amend, and you
put
that
in. I put in a motion to amend. He never ruled on it. He waited until after he did his order. Then he said, now I'm going to allow your second amendment to come through.
That your amended complaint.
That
now that happened. Please let me finish. I'm trying to clarify this for everybody. That all transpired last year into September, correct?
Yes.
All right. So you did your amended complaint last September. All right, and the ruling that just came where it was dismissed recently, a month ago, was the dismissal of your first amended complaint, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Wait a minute, Dave. The dismissals came on to my complaint. And in his ruling for 124, the amended complaint that was
What do you mean 124? You mean January?
January 24th. Yeah.
I just want to clarify because you've been bouncing all over the place here,
okay,
and there's misunderstandings here. That's what I'm trying to clarify.
So the amended complaint that I put in September, this is what he's allowing into the record for them to answer, respond to now.
Okay. So in that order, did he tell you you can amend the complaint?
The one that was in there.
No, Jesse.
Your second amended complaint, did he write in there that you can now amend it?
Yeah. No, Jesse, you're jumping ahead. What she's saying, correct me, ma'am, if I'm wrong, is the court is just now exactly. dealing with your amended complaint from last September. You sat on it for 6 months.
Yeah, I understand that. My question is directed at that. So on that order, does it say she can amend her second amended complaint?
Yes. Yes, it does.
Then amend it. It's
okay.
Right. Larry understood it. Jeff understood it.
Yeah.
Nobody was confused. Yeah. Then amend it. Take your second amended complaint and amend it.
Okay. Okay.
And call it your third amended complaint.
Okay.
Right.
That's right.
Sure?
And if it's your fifth, it's your fifth. Who cares? Just do what the court tells you because he's pointing out your weaknesses.
Yeah, be sure to follow the instructions that the judge has given you.
Okay,
yeah.
Now, can you tell me again about, since they put in, this is out of the four corners, I'm going to listen to what was said, the four corners of the complaint, them being separate entities, Wells Fargo Bank and Wells Fargo Home Mortgage. What did you say?
Yeah, when you write your new complaint, make sure you identify these as individual separate entities, and if you know where they're incorporated, include that too. You want to create as much confusion as you can about these Wells Fargo entities.
That's what I can't.
Does that make sense?
I've looked for information about Wells Fargo Bank and Wells Fargo Home Mortgage, and all you keep getting is that it's a subsidiary. Wells Fargo Home Mortgage is a division within Wells Fargo Bank.
Right. And your question is, your confusion is, they're telling you what your answer.
But they're saying this is one entity.
It cannot be Kmart and Walmart. It's either Kmart or Walmart. It cannot be both. It can be a subsidiary of, and a subsidiary still a separate and distinct entity.
That's a subsidiary, but they're saying that Wells Fargo Home Mortgage is a division of Wells Fargo Bank N.A.
Oh. A division.
It still doesn't matter. They're using a different name.
Yeah.
It's a different corporation.
Yeah, it's a division. I'm trying to give her the correct... What I would do is point that out to the judge, and the determination cannot be made. It's too early for the court to make a determination based on hearsay. The other side is, remember that word hearsay? The other side is attempting to convolute, right?
And I did put in that they had different EIN numbers.
Exactly. So what I like to do is point out to the court it's too early to make a determination on as to whether the two Wells Fargo Bank, you know, N.A. and Wells Fargo Bank or Wells Fargo Home Loan, whoever the hell they are the same corporation or are distinct and separate entities until discovery. And in a motion to dismiss, it is not proper. It's improper on a motion to dismiss to allow the other side to introduce evidence.
Yeah, did the
point
the judge in his order indicate that the two entities were the same?
No. No, what he did say was that they're my creditor because I've been making payments to them as a servicer since 2011.
You can't have made payments to both of those two entities.
Yeah, that's easy enough they're to rebut
okay.
that.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, that's easy.
All right. We've spent about as much time as we can on this. We got to keep moving. We got other people in
but
the
that's
queue.
That's good. That's good stuff. That's good stuff.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
All righty.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's go to 617. We gotta kind of cut these a little shorter here. Otherwise, we're not going to get all our people in tonight. 617. You've been unmuted. Go ahead, please. We're not hearing you. If you may have your handset muted, if you're not going to respond, then we're going to move on. Which, well,
hello.
Try it again. Come on, you guys got to be on the ball when we call on you.
617. Am I available to speak?
Yes,
yeah.
You are.
This is Paul.
Go ahead, please.
Okay.
Yeah, Paul.
I got to get a new phone because I don't know what's going on. I've been in good news for the last few weeks, and I just don't know. I'm going to get a new phone next week. But anyway,
well, you made enough money to go buy a whole phone system, let alone just a new phone.
Buy a phone store.
Get the company now. Just got an offer for $100,000 today from this company, and I told them no because
Good for you.
1,200 calls, and they offered 100,000. They said, we ain't going over 100,000. So I'm going to wait for a little while, and they've just been ordered to file a motion to compel. They didn't want to give me nothing, so the judge ordered them, listen, give them every record. We don't care if it's 10 accounts for all these phone calls, and none was under his name. Give it to them. They're not his, redacted. So they got you get 30 days to give it to them about 20 days ago. But anyway, that's my good news, and I got my writ today for $14,000 from Ottawa Mortgage. They defaulted, and this is what can happen when you're with what lies in your debt. And I got another. I counted up my phone calls today. I'm up to 4,000. And the reason I got all these phone calls is I used to be a tobacco distributor down the East Coast, so I used to have to get multiple numbers in different areas so my customers could think I was in their areas. And that's
correct.
How I got all these numbers, you know. But I'm hammering them, using the system. It works, and I appreciate it. And just keep doing what you're doing.
We ain't going to stop anytime soon unless we're dead.
Well, yeah. How about that when we got somebody that's turning down an offer of settlement for $100,000?
Yeah, $100,000. This ain't no joke. They offered me $100,000.
That's so sweet. I want to hear that myself.
They said, we're not going over $100,000. I said, oh, yes, you are. And I showed them. I said, I just sent you 283 messages that you left on my answering service. It's 9 CDs. So you will be getting them tomorrow. Here's the tracking number. So when you get that, listen to them and think about it. So I think that'll change their mind, along with my phone record to show all the calls. You know, we're in discovery, and I'm just giving them everything. They don't want to give me nothing.
Well,
but now
hey,
they have
Paul,
to.
Did they give you their insurance company's name in the 26A1 report?
I asked for it. They fought me. The judge told them they got to give it to me. We went through.
Yeah, because that's probably
account.
Above their deductible level. I mean, and once you get the insurance company involved, they're going to settle real quick.
Yeah.
Oh, so that's probably why they won't go over that number, huh?
If that claim went to their insurance company, they would probably never be able to get insurance from another insurance company again for a reasonable amount. And the insurer is going to have to pay out. And if they fail to report a claim like that to their insurer, the policy usually contains a covenant in there that if they fail to report the claim, the insurer doesn't have to pay it. But it shows their guilt right there. So they can be in a lot of trouble.
And
so you want to get the insurance information, and you want to get the insurer involved quickly. Once you get the insurance information, call the insurer up and say, "Hey, I've got this claim. I wanted to make sure the company reported it to you."
Beautiful. Thank you very much. And one other thing I want to say, I'm going to post this on the forum. This is very important. They've been bitching and hollering. No, we don't have an automatic dialing system, da-da-da-da-da. I've been doing research till my eyes bleed. I said, oh, yeah, you don't have a? Well, the FCC has 4 automatic dialing systems registered to your company. And here's the serial numbers. Here's when you registered. Here's when you re-registered, because you got to re-register every 4 years. So I'm going to put that on the forum, because all these companies, when they get these automatic dialers, they have to register them with the FCC. And the FCC gives them a certificate when they first come to register it. When they get approval, they'll give them approval number. You can get the serial number from the automatic dialing system that they've got. Each one, it's all there. I'm going to post it on the
don't forget to do that.
Oh, that's
do it on the TCPA takedown section, Paul.
You know I'm going to do that. You know I'm going to do that. I got it for NCO, and I also got it for Frederick Hanna and someone else. Who else? There's so many of them. But I definitely got that, and I got it right on my desktop.
Oh, please tell me.
Also, I'm going to post it on the TCPA takedown. I'm going to put it up. That's very important news for everybody, because you can go right to the FCC and get all the information for the auto dialers that they got. They got everything.
Paul,
serial
no
numbers.
Joke.
Well, I learned from
Paul,
you.
Oh, you're no joke.
From you guys. I learned. I just studied.
I just studied.
You studied good, Paul. You're a great example for everybody.
Well, with three classes, What Lies in Your Debt, Terry's Call, and Your Call, Dave, with all the archives you guys got, come on, I don't listen to radio no more.
Who needs radio?
My vehicle, you turn it on, you got either What Lies in Your Debt, Terry's Call, or Dave's Call. And that's what we're listening to, for real. I don't want to hear
no more music.
In the office. Put it on, you know? But thanks a lot. I will place that in the forums because that is very, very important news for the TCPA,
yes.
You know?
Yes.
Thank you, Paul.
There is.
Yep.
Thank you very much, Paul.
And all congratulations.
Right. All right. Thank you very much. Paul,
buy a new phone.
Yeah.
I know.
Oh, man.
All right.
All right, I just love this. Paul's just a fabulous example for everybody. He really is. All right,
yeah.
Let's go to 630. You have been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Hi, guys. Lauren Trotter calling. How are you?
Hey, Lauren.
Pretty good.
How
are you?
Good, good. On my one Bank of America foreclosure, we have falsification of documents. We're doing discovery right now, or depositions, because when my husband was still alive, my husband went to go see this manager. We found out that the loan officer actually wrote down that my brother made $11,500 more than he did. They gave him a bonus every month. So anyway, we're hoping that they will, tell the truth of this, and we can certainly, she was fired for having done this, and that's what my husband found out from the manager countrywide. Anyway, to boil it all down to one question that I have, and this was as a result of the one foreclosure I lost, which was, even though there was falsification of documents, the judge basically said, well, hey, if I rule that the judge, that the bank falsified the documents, committed fraud, that just means that we rescind the note because the note is void ab initio, which means you got to pay back the money. Are there any other defenses to this other than when they commit fraud, they're obviously she's been fired for having committed fraud and falsifying numerous loan documents, but I
okay.
don't want the...
Lauren, I understand.
Yeah.
I'm going to cut you short because I know where you're going
okay.
with this. I've known you for a while, right? And I know
okay.
I'm sorry about your husband again. I know. But
oh, thank
the
you.
Reality is simple as this. The judge was dead right on par. Okay, it's void ab initio, void from the beginning, void on its face, right? So the whole transaction went down, it's no good. So now you have punitive damages.
Okay.
You understand? Loss of home, moving, stress. That's what he was telling you. You didn't get it at the time. That's exactly what that judge is saying.
He voided all of my, well, and I had an attorney, actually, but this was his first trial. So, and I'm going to go bankrupt now because they got a deficiency judgment against me of $270,000 after selling my property for $110,000, and I had a $200,000 cash offer 2 weeks later. So, anyway, I'm totally
again, did you hear what I just told you?
Yes.
Did he void your claims? How could he have voided your claims? That's the question I guess I have.
He just basically said that judge had struck my affirmative defenses and my counterclaims, so I had nothing to rest on. And he listened to the trial, and he just said, I believe the bank, that the bank made mistakes on 25 places on the loan application.
So he said that they made mistakes.
That's what he decided, that it was rigged. I mean, Illinois is one of the most corrupt states
they all
there
are.
Is.
Yeah, Lauren, Illinois is not special. Trust me, they're all
okay.
screwed.
No.
Go ahead, John.
I just
want to
know
if thinking.
I have
I'm,
any kind of defense to this. Other
it's not
than,
a defense.
You know,
you have a suit. You have a suit.
Yes.
You don't have a defense.
And I'm doing this.
You have
I,
a lawsuit.
I'm pursuing this, but if I file bankruptcy, I'm hoping that the trustee abandons this case because he thinks no one's going to win it. But he could step into my shoes and take over.
Yeah, that's the problem with the bankruptcy.
Yes, but I don't have a choice right now. They're taking my, because of the deficiency judgment they took, now they're taking my rent money and my other foreclosed house, and that's a Washington Mutual to Chase, and they struck all the counter, the affirmative defenses and counterclaims on that one as well, and they just don't care.
Yeah.
They don't care.
Now, listen, No. A lot of it is your own fault. I've told you this in the past. And everybody here needs to listen right now, clearing the wax out of your ears. Counterclaims are useless in state courts. I've said it 100 times. I'll say it 1,000 times, 100,000 times. Absolutely useless. Lauren, I told you this 1.5 years ago, 2 years ago. You were upset because of it. I told you it's useless. You need to take your claims right to federal court and forget. It's a whole separate lawsuit in the federal court. There's no striking of anything. Okay?
Well,
and that's the problem. That happens in Florida. Yeah, that happens in Florida on a daily basis. Attorneys finally learn to quit filing counterclaims. Don't do that.
Really?
If the, yes. Lauren, come on. You've been around for 2 years or so.
I've had attorneys doing this now, and I'm at this.
Well,
this
idiot. You've also heard us say that 100 times. So at the end of the day, if I file a counterclaim, the judge, remember, you're looking at these judges who don't know MERS, who don't know assignments, who don't know nothing. They know, old school, if you didn't pay your mortgage, you're behind, the bank wins, end of discussion. That's what they know.
Yes, that's the bias.
So now when you come in with an affirmative defense in their minds, and they're just humans like anybody else, they're going, this damn crackpot over here just wants to get out of paying her mortgage and wants a free house, and
I don't
get a free house. Why the hell have I given her a free house?
That's right.
You have to take your violations, because we all know that what you were looking at right there is just straight up FDCPA. That's all it is. Then you got TILA, you got RESPA, you got unfair and deceptive. Those are all claims you can take right to the federal court. Right in the middle of this foreclosure, you file a lawsuit up there against them. Period. You see what I mean? They're screwed. Now they have to attend to that up there before they handle this down here.
Mm-hmm.
See, the other reason that counterclaims go unnoticed, per se, because that's the best terminology I could use, is when I file a counterclaim, if Lauren sues me, and then I sue her back, Lauren can't move forward till my suit is handled and out of the way. Can't do anything.
But
so the bank is stuck.
I have to file a bankruptcy now.
No, that's understandable. We're not talking about that. I understand that.
Okay,
but I'm saying this is advice to everybody. Don't file counterclaims on foreclosure cases. Don't do it.
Okay.
Take it to a whole separate court and file a separate and distinct claim.
Gotcha.
Because you have one. You have one.
Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with John O'Brien from the Recorder of Deeds in Massachusetts, who's doing free affidavits?
Yes.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure, because I'm getting one of those as well, because I have a robo-signer, and I thought, well, we'll add that to the mix here. Okay, so take the counterclaims to federal court and just...
And they're not counterclaims. They're separate and distinct violations.
It's
period.
A lawsuit.
End of story.
Yes. And I had a federal case, and it was dismissed without prejudice, and because the judge had appointed a pro bono attorney for me who did not want the case. So he said,
much.
Go back
to
state court, and you'll get more time with that. So anyway, and just one more little quick thing. Any kind of traction on these stamps that are signed, like my Washington Mutual mortgage,
the
has a stamp on it? No, this is just
Allonge.
A stamp.
It's a bear,
there's no Allonge. It's just that we sold it without recourse.
That is your Allonge. That is your Allonge. It's a stamp. It becomes
all
a
right.
bearer instrument. Okay, the problem with those is, again, there's nobody that can testify to when it was signed. So when was it signed? When was it stamped?
Yes.
It could have been done 10 seconds before I walked into this courtroom. Nobody knows this. Who can testify to that fact?
Well, they just used a stamp with the guy's name. So they didn't bother signing anything. They just stamped his name.
Fine, but I could have done that in the lobby at the courthouse.
Yes, exactly. So
that's the point.
Him.
That's what you have to challenge immediately.
Yes, okay, challenge that. And that one, they've dismissed the counterclaims and affirmative defenses on that one as well.
That's fine. Take your same affirmative defenses and your same claims and go file it in federal court.
But isn't that Rooker-Feldman or res judicata or whatever that is, where if it's already been decided by the district court, it can't be reheard?
They dismissed them.
Court?
They didn't rule on them. They just dismissed them out of there, right?
Okay. I don't know.
Did they rule on them? Did you have a hearing and then the judge says, you know what, ruling against you on these? Or did the judge say we're going
to
strike them?
I'm going to have to ask my attorney. I think they just struck them.
That's right. So there's no ruling on them. That's generally
so
what happens.
Struck,
so you can take them and go right
go
up.
Okay.
Yeah, the Rooker-Feldman only applies if you lose. They don't want the losers up there crying. So
right.
You're not losing anything. They just struck them. Basically, the judge says, sorry, lady, you don't have any rights. Shut your mouth. Get out of here. I'm going to handle this. That's basically what the judge did.
Yes, exactly. Yes. I mean, the judges are just tired of all this stuff now. It's like, we heard every argument there is. Get out of here. You know, you
exactly.
didn't pay the mortgage.
Now,
get the hell
one
out.
One last bit of advice. Yeah, one last bit of advice is why don't you look up the judge's financials?
Okay.
We always, always, always tell everybody, as soon as you find out who the judge is, look up the financials. Matter of fact, I ordered all the financials January 8th on all the senior judges in Orange County, Osceola County, and Seminole County. And Larry can testify to this. It would take literally 5 minutes, and I would have them. I had to email her again last Wednesday and say, what is your problem? Why are you taking your sweet time to give me something that is right there? I was upset. Within 5 minutes, she emailed me all of them.
And why?
They're dragging their feet. They don't want to know because if they have any interest in any of those banks or stocks or any interest in any of those plaintiffs.
Okay, then you can get them recused.
Thank you. So this guy that ruled against you, you need to go look because don't forget, I had Judge Stroker ruling against me, and he had 20,000 shares or 25,000 shares of Bank of America.
Oh,
and who was the plaintiff
God.
Against me? Bank of America.
Is that funny?
Yeah,
what
so don't be fooled by these idiots. You need to go look.
Okay. All right. Well, you renewed my faith. Okay.
Good, Lauren. I'm glad.
Okay.
You're a sweet gal.
Thank you so much, guys. You take care.
All right.
I appreciate
all right.
it.
Thank you. All
bye-bye.
Right, sweetie.
Okay, let's go to 813. You have been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Hi, everybody.
Good evening.
Tampa night. Tampa
I'm
area
I'm
code.
Overwhelmed tonight with all the information, all the new information. Thank you so much.
And thank goodness for recordings of calls so you can go back and re-listen several times, right?
That's right.
Isn't that the truth? I have a couple of questions tonight with respect to the foreclosure process.
Sure.
My friend has paperwork from SLS that says this communication is from a debt collector. This is an attempt to collect a debt. And what they want to do is have him fill out paperwork for a loan remodification.
Okay.
My question is, since we don't owe debt collectors anything, how do these people factor into the foreclosure process?
They don't. It's probably an advertisement to what I would figure for some kind of loan mod. I wouldn't think that that's the actual bank. Who's the actual bank that he's dealing with or she's dealing with?
I can't answer that. They just received some paperwork in the mail a couple of days ago, and it just says SLS out of Colorado.
Yeah, I don't even
know
who they are.
They call my friend every couple of days. Have you filled out your paperwork? You need to get
really?
Back this back into us as soon as possible. They're taking the demeanor that they're standing in the gap between a loan remodification and the foreclosure.
Thanks. Yeah.
Right.
Well, you know, what I would do is, you know, if it's Jesse sues first, ask questions later anymore. I'm just tired of these idiots. And it's an attempt to collect a debt because at the end of the day, what they're doing is they're asking you to reveal all your assets, right? So
mm-hmm.
then they can go collect money, right? That's basically what mm-hmm. they're doing. Is that not what they're doing? So that's, you know, Tanner and I won one of the very first cases here in Florida on that, where an actual loan mod package was considered an attempt to collect a debt. So, yeah. Because you're asking me for my financials, are you not? For what purpose? What's
right.
the purpose of me sending you these so you can collect money? It's a simple argument.
Right.
It doesn't seem so on
and
the surface.
And they were calling
that's
his...
exactly what it is.
Right. I agree, and thank you for putting the light bulb on there.
Yeah, it's easy enough. Take it to federal court and you don't sue them. You'll see, and don't forget to include the TCPA. Are they calling her cell phone or are they calling a home line or something?
They were calling his cell phone, Jesse, but they
How did they get the number? That's the question. How did they get the number?
Right. I'm not sure how they got the number, but they asked him if they could give him a call when they sent him the paperwork or whatever. He said, no, don't call me on my cell phone because you're calling me 3 or 4 times a day, and it's a business cell phone, so you can't do that. So they stopped calling him on the cell phone.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it doesn't matter. It's too late. They've already, rung the bell.
They've
you
already
can't
done
unring
it.
The bell. Yeah, yeah. You can't unring the bell. It's done. It's wrong. It's over, okay? So what he has to do at this point now, what I would do if it was me is I would sue him under TCPA, FDCPA, and FCCPA, which is the Florida Act.
Okay.
For all that. They remod this, guys.
Wow.
How about I use your money that you're going to pay me so I can go get a down payment on a new house? Simple as that. These guys are idiots. Yeah. And you got to find out how they got their phone number. See, that's always a big question, is how did they get the phone number? Because if the bank gave them the phone number, the bank didn't have the right to do that.
Mm-hmm.
See? So there's just goes on, but you got to find that out through discovery, of course.
Right. And
or your friend, because... Yeah, your friends sometimes won't tell you everything. Dave, we know this, don't we?
Right. Right. And they don't. Often they don't. I agree.
Yeah.
And why isn't your friend on the call?
His work schedule isn't conducive
right.
to being
that
on
answers
the call.
The question.
But he does. Yeah. He does listen to the calls after.
Okay.
Good.
But
okay.
sometimes
good.
It's just good. Important to get an answer to some questions.
No, absolutely agreed.
And a hypothetical question that I have, and this is just my mind working. Is let's say someone chooses to do a loan remodification and they're approved for it and they get down the road 6-8 months and they're in the same boat again, they can't make the payments. What does that scenario look like? Does the whole foreclosure process begin again or do they pick up where they left off?
Usually they pick up where they left off.
Okay.
That's the usual.
Okay.
So,
and where they've
yeah.
left off now is to do a loan remodification or a deed in lieu of foreclosure, and there was one other choice that was given from his attorneys, and I can't remember what that third choice was.
Wait a minute. The guy has attorneys?
He had attorneys, and he fired them.
I don't blame him.
But at the end, when he fired the attorneys, they had just sent him an email explaining what his three options were at this point. And they did.
Yeah, winning the case is not an option. Holy crap. These people are idiots.
So, you may know the
firm. No, they can just pick up.
Yeah, you know.
No names. No names.
Okay.
No names.
Well, being a Florida boy, well, a relocated Florida boy, you probably know who they are.
Anyway.
If
it's Tampa area, I know exactly who it is. So,
mm-hmm.
Anyway, the reality is that they're violating TCPA. FDCPA, FCCPA, it's up to him to do it. As far as the foreclosure goes, yeah, they're just going to pick up where they left off. Done. And, Well, let me finish. What happens with loan mods, guys, is in the state of Florida, there is a law on the books, and I forget the exact statute, Larry. You might remember, right? But even attorneys got all aggravated at first and they changed it. You can't take any money up front and promise that you're going to fix something, meaning it's a foreclosure bailout, okay? So there's no foreclosure bailouts, and the realtors and all that couldn't take money up front for short sales, and the attorneys couldn't take any money up front. The attorneys, of course, were screaming, oh, what do you mean we can't have any money up front? Well, all of a sudden the legislature changed, and they can have money up front, right? So long story short, if the bank takes the money and it's completed, and they don't follow through with that, you can go after them. So that's another avenue, just so you know. I don't know where your buddy's at in that stage or you or whoever, but just think about what I just said. So.
Well, the attorneys that he did have, the ones that he fired, did manage to keep everything in suspense for about 7 years.
Well, the statute of limitations is long gone, man.
And
it's 5 years in the state of Florida.
Right. The last time he made a payment was about 6 or 7 years ago.
Well, they can't even collect anymore. Is the case still active or has it been dismissed?
I don't think it's been dismissed yet. I think that what happened was he was given those three choices from his attorneys, either a loan remodification or a deed in lieu of foreclosure, and it's still pending in that space. It's been that way for about 3 months, as far as I know. And
man, I'd do something to get rid of that case is what I would do.
Do something to cause it to be dismissed.
Yeah.
Because then you're out past the five-year statute.
Yep. Boy, and there's a big to-do in the 5th DCA about that, by the way, Dave. I'm getting those briefs here real soon.
Oh, yeah.
I'm share them with their buddies. Yeah, yeah. It's a big to-do with the Singleton case and all that. So, but anyway.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we got to keep moving here.
We got to keep trucking here. So.
So file a motion to have it dismissed?
Well, I don't know where he's at. I can't say file a motion to do anything. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know where it's at.
Okay.
So, you know.
Okay.
But he's got to do something. He's got to do something to get rid of that case.
Okay. Thank you so much.
All right, sweetie.
Okay, let's go to 770. You have been unmuted.
Hey, guys. I'm calling for somebody that can't be on the call tonight. And they need to know something before the call next week. So,
good. Okay.
Yeah, isn't that great? It's an FDCPA case that they need to amend because they got a lot of new information that changes everything. But they have to serve the parties by next week. So they were going to do a motion to extend time to serve.
Is this going out to the 120 days? Because
yeah.
They haven't been initially served.
Yeah.
Right.
No, just
they haven't been
them.
Initially
just served
yet.
Hey, listen to me. Serve them. At the same time you serve them, file the amended complaint. That way they don't even have a chance to answer. That's all. Simple. That's done. That's it.
Well, it's only a week, and he's afraid because marshals have to be used in Georgia that they might not get it served in a week.
Well, how come you've waited this long?
Yeah,
well,
so
because
what's the question?
Information has been coming in, and it keeps coming in, and it's changing everything.
But you can't run up against these deadlines.
Well, nothing's going to happen. The worst that's going to happen is the judge is going to issue an order to show cause, and all you have to do is tell him, well, it's with the marshals, and it's going to be served soon. It's not a problem.
Yeah, but at the same time, amend the complaint, the new one. And file it. So that way, before they answer, you don't have to get leave to amend. You just file it. It's done. And then serve them with that booger.
And they're going to wait at least 18 or 19 days after they're served before they file anything. And most likely it's going to be a motion to anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well,
you're not up against the wall.
In the federal forms, there's a, all the forms they have in the back of the federal orders that shows memorandum and support and blah, blah, blah about, if you need to wait to or need more time to serve. And I figured this was a good enough reason that maybe that would be better than having both of them in there and messing with them.
I don't understand what you just said.
The case is not going to be dismissed on the 120th day.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that instead of having the amended motion would be the one that they would be working with instead of having two of them in there, it would be amended right away from the beginning, and it would flow better afterwards, I guess.
Yeah,
if you did it the way I just told you to do it, they're going to be working off the second amended complaint.
Okay, all right, I'll tell them.
They're going to ignore the one you served them because you filed the second one immediately.
Yeah, they're going to be working harder. Worst case scenario.
Yeah.
Who cares if they work harder and spend more money?
Okay, great.
Well,
thanks.
You got to be nice.
I'm talking about the defendants, not your...
No, so you got to be nice to the defendants, right?
No,
not
really. Absolutely not. No.
Yeah, I know. So
here's my rule.
Said,
you be courteous to the other side. You're never nice.
Yeah, that's right.
That's it.
We don't play by those rules. That's right.
Yep.
Oh, Jesse, you mentioned something about getting financials. And I went in to get financials in Florida.
Yeah.
And I thought I had the right email. I didn't get anything back. Do you have the place we're supposed to go that we can get them? Like we can email to get the judge's financials?
Yeah.
Do you mind giving it?
Nope. Sure don't. If you're here in Florida, you need to send it to Okay, open up. There it is. It's the ethics.state.fl.us. That's the website you go to.
Ethics.state.fl.us.
Yes, that is the website. The actual web address, or the email address, is disclosure@leg.state.fl.us. Isn't it just so easy for us to get this information?
I did have the wrong email. Thank you very much.
All righty. That take care of you?
Appreciate it. Bye.
All righty. Thank you, dear. I got to keep this thing rocking and rolling here tonight. We're going to go to 602.
Yes, hi. This is Jay Levine here. I'm actually a friend of John Stewart's, he was working on a quiet title action with me for a property that was foreclosed on. It was filed in Superior Court, and then the attorneys moved it to federal court, where it was dismissed without us even litigating. It was dismissed with prejudice, even.
Yeah, 12B6, right.
I'm sorry?
A 12B6.
I guess so.
That's what it is in federal court, 12B6.
Okay. Now the attorneys are coming back and they're saying they want their attorney's fees, and they listed $33,000 in attorney's fees, $33,717. John is no longer around. John was actually on what basis is they said that they were the prevailing party?
No, that doesn't work. There's only three ways
yeah.
they can get attorney's fees. One is if, and I'm just generalizing here, but either the case
okay.
is entirely frivolous and the judge is going to just say, yeah, you need to pay their attorney's fees. There's a contract involved that forces one side to pay the attorney's fees, or there's a statute that says somebody has to pay attorney's fees. So which is it?
Well, they said they're using Local Rule 54.2, made effective December 1st, 2013, our motion for attorney's fees is timely. This motion should replace or supplement the court's discretion, document number 28, filed February 11, 2014. In other words, they filed an amendment here.
Okay. So you read the rule. What does it say?
Actually, I haven't read the rule. I just got this document in the mail.
Okay, we can answer your question then.
I'm sorry?
We can't answer your question then because we don't know what that rule says.
Oh, okay. Well, let me see now. Hold on a second. Let me see if there is something here. Arizona cases provide guidance on the proper circumstances under which fees should be awarded under the statute. There are several factors for a trial judge to consider in determining whether attorney's fees should be awarded, including, one, the merits of the claim or defense presented by the unsuccessful party, whether the litigation should have been avoided or settled and the successful party's efforts were completely superfluous in achieving the result. Number three, whether assessing fees against the unsuccessful party would cause extreme hardship. Whether the successful party prevailed with respect to all the relief sought. Number five, the novelty of the legal question presented. Number six, whether the claim or defense had previously been adjudicated in this jurisdiction. And seven, whether the award would discourage other parties with tenable claims or defenses from litigating or defending legitimate contract issues. Under ARS 12-349, is within this court's discretion to award attorney's fees when a party brings a claim without substantial justification. Primary to delay or harass or unreasonably expands or delays the proceedings.
So what'd you hear there, Larry?
Frivolous.
So they're saying that I filed a frivolous lawsuit.
Correct.
Right.
And they filed a motion to dismiss. Yeah, but they filed
yeah.
a motion to dismiss, right? It was
yes.
never litigated. So now
no.
you have to wonder how in the hell they racked up $33,000 at even $500 an hour to file a motion to dismiss.
It's impossible.
Well, they actually gave a supplemental budget preparation for litigation here, and it's very padded on, and it says $33,000.
Mm-hmm.
But they
yeah. Well, whether it's $33,000 or $3,300, obviously you need to fight it, and you need to research that rule and see how it applies in this particular case.
Okay. Now, one thing that I addressed that neither the court nor the defending attorneys addressed was that they had no assignment of deed of trust on this property on which to foreclose. And the court refused to address that. They addressed anything and everything other, all improprieties that I had subjected myself to in my court litigation or filing papers and stuff. And they just basically dismissed with prejudice based on the, I guess they said, frivolousness of the case. But nobody really address the issue that they foreclose with no assignment of deed of trust in which to foreclose.
Yeah, they usually do that. So the problem with the quiet title suit, and I know John and myself too, so like you said, John disappeared. It doesn't surprise
yes,
me.
Yes, he's actually, he didn't disappear. He's actually in prison. He was convicted.
Oh, wow.
He's in prison in Winslow, Arizona.
Yeah. So the problem that you have is they're not recognizing that. Remember what I said earlier, I don't know how long you've been on the call, but when you start recognizing things like that in these courts, they try to avoid it.
Yes.
Because it's going to affect everybody else. You see what I mean?
Okay. Sets a precedent.
So,
yeah, and then they're going to go, wait, if we do it for this guy, the whole rest of the world is going to be, coming down with the same defense, and we can't have that. So just remember that, as far as the fees, it sounds like it's nonsense to me.
Right. So
they're
going
to have to really explain. Yeah, they're really going to have to explain how they racked up $33,000 to file a motion to dismiss, because that's just no judge in this world is going to swallow that bull crap.
Okay. Without even going to court to litigate.
Right.
No, if I were you, I'd file a motion, in response to it, obviously.
Yes, I have to do that.
Yeah, get that going. You have to respond to it, but you have to show how frivolous their claim is. Think about it. $33,000 at $500 an hour. Let's just rack it up at $500 an hour. What is that? It's really absurd.
Right.
Right. You got to make your logical arguments there.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, that's 800 damn hours. Come on, really? To file a motion to dismiss, even a lowly, dumb pro se like yourself could handle that, couldn't you? Without 800 hours worth of work?
But I wanted your advice on this.
Yeah, but you heard what I said, right? So that's the kind of the example I would use. I'm a dumb pro se, and it ain't going to take me 800 hours to file a response to their ignorant.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, come on. It's ridiculous.
Yes. Okay.
So.
Okay.
Okay.
Man, sorry you got in that mess, man. I am.
Yep. Thank you very much.
All righty. All right, thank you.
God, I hate to hear that.
Yeah, I hate to hear that. Let's go to 702. You have been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Dave.
Yes.
Okay. I just didn't see if I was on. Okay. Today I called the company that's trying to foreclose on my property. And they put a sales date for Friday, and I was talking to the person on the phone, and I asked them, how can I get this sale postponed? And he was telling me that I needed to contact Chase. And I told him, Chase is nowhere on my deed of trust, so why would I have to contact them? And besides, it's your company that's trying to foreclose on my property. So he was telling me that basically, even though they are the ones trying to foreclose on me, but for me to get the sale stopped, I have to call Chase. But that didn't make any sense to me because it's
well,
not
what's your
Chase
question?
My question is, I mean, do I have any cause of action against this company that's trying to foreclose on my house?
Of course you do. You're not. You obviously you can't be a member. You'd already know this information. You need to take them to task. You don't just sit around and listen to them. You sue them. Make them prove they have the right to foreclose on you.
Okay. So, I mean, what
don't ask me how, because there's 25 ways to do it. So just remember that.
Okay.
Now, we got to have your question. We can't just wait. I'm sorry, but we got people waiting in the queue,
yeah.
So we have to take care of things here.
Okay.
Have
and
you
I
got,
also
a question?
Got a letter? Yes, I got a letter from Chase, and they're talking about that I missed payment and what I needed to bring it current. Now, my question is, I need to write them a debt validation letter, right?
Yeah, you have to respond to that, but that's just a notice of default is what it is, I'm sure.
No, actually, I'm not talking about the notice of default. This is a statement. It's a payment summary statement.
Right.
So do I need to – I need to dispute this, right? I need to write them a debt validation
letter,
right? I don't know. Right?
Again, I don't know. I'm not looking at what you're looking at. I don't know where you're at in the stages. You're asking random questions that are all over the place. So it's kind of tough to put, you know, the nail in and say, okay, here's a good way to start. But the good way to start is to start studying immediately in the website on dealing with your trustee, when the trustee is a servicer is a debt collector, when the trustee is a debt collector, how to address that. That's where you need to start. Once you get there, then you can see everybody's situation is different. There's no two that are alike. So it's impossible to just analyze yours and say, okay, well, we know yours. That's impossible. Don't know. There's too many factors. That's all.
Well, they filed a notice of default, and they filed a notice of sale.
Yeah.
But so this is what I'm saying. They're not anywhere on my deed of trust. And
we understand
that. I
understand that. They're the substitute trustee. Understood completely. We've done this a time or two. I know exactly what you're saying.
Okay, so at this point, what do I need to do?
I don't know what you need to do. Again, everybody's different. You either have to do a TRO, temporary restraining order, based on the fact that they're not on your deed, and you explain that to the court, and you have that in your TRO. There's TROs on the site, pretty much standard work all 50 states. As a matter of fact, there's some in there for Las Vegas, right where you're at, 702, right? You're in Vegas. So there's some that are right there, right for Nevada. So, but you, of course, you have to look at your situation specifically and say, okay, this is why I'm filing the TRO. And that stops it. Hopefully that stops it. When you get that done, then you go after them in the federal court. But to ask any one of us, what do I do? We don't know. We don't know where you're at. We don't know the letters. We don't know what's going on. It's impossible.
Yeah. Are you a member?
Yes.
Have you been studying in the saving your home section and the foreclosure bash?
I've listened to the foreclosure bash.
No, have you been
bash,
studying in those areas? That's a yes or a no question.
I have been studying.
Okay.
Okay.
And
you're
relevant, Dan. He's got to go look at the TRO. He's got to get the TRO.
Yeah. You're at the point you got to do the TRO.
ASAP.
You're running out of
yesterday.
Time. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. Okay. Let's
you know,
go
there's one
to...
thing that he touched on that about getting statements with the changes that the CFPB just put in recently. Well, lenders are supposed to be making a monthly contact with customers, and so they're starting up with statements again, even though the practice was after three missed payments to stop. People are going to start getting normal statements in the mail again.
Yeah, which I've gotten, John, by the way, just so you know. You and I talked about this before, and the problem with the CFPB ruling is it's contrary to the federal law and the state law in a lot of states. So the CFPB can do what they want. What they're doing is creating a bunch of lawsuits because there's tons and tons of foreclosure families out there that have attorneys. And every time they send a state, it's an attempt to collect a debt, and it's a federal violation. Done. So what good
and
does that really do?
And what's important is where it says on there, if you have a question, when it says, we are a debt collector and this is an attempt to collect a debt.
Right.
If they were the original creditor and it wasn't securitized, it wouldn't say that.
Yep.
So,
okay.
Bear that in mind.
Let's go to 919. You've been unmuted. Hello, 919. Okay, if we're not going to get anybody that's going to answer here, well, they just disappeared. Okay, let's go to 305.
Hey, guys, John Padilla here in Miami. How y'all doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. I'm pretty good here. I'm knee-deep into my case against Bayview. I called a couple weeks ago in regards to this motion to strike jury demand. I saw Jesse had put something up on the forum, and so I went ahead and I filed a response. They actually filed a reply to my response with some interesting case law.
Yeah, you weren't on their call earlier. I already answered your question. I used you an example.
Today?
You weren't on the call earlier. Yeah, today. But on the call, I said exactly you were the example I used, that you filed the correct response. They throw you some BS cases, and all of a sudden you fall apart. Call it up for hearing and tell them, okay, these cases are not applicable, and print out the case, give them to the judge, and say, judge, in these cases, these guys were the servicers. In my case, there's no connection to them whatsoever.
Yeah.
You see where I'm going? So if there's still no connection, they can't claim to be something they're not. It'd be like me claiming I'm your dad.
Yeah.
Unless I have a birth certificate, I'm not your dad. You know, simple as that.
It's like Billy Bob from down the block saying that I owe him $100,000 and, you know.
And you can't
no
sue me and have a jury trial because I'm your servicer.
Yeah.
Really? Tell me that you're my servicer. See, this is the daunting things they do to try to throw mud in the water. And so you go, oh, my God. Well, you lost sight of the original point, which is there's no connection to you. So are you my servicer? I don't know. There's no connection.
There's no connection. Now, do I respond to this reply?
No, you call it up for hearing.
Okay.
Immediately. Fast as you can call it up.
Okay. And the other question was with MERS. MERS cannot assign anything to anybody because they're not an owner of anything, correct?
Well, technically speaking, yes. Legally speaking, yes. But there's no law in Florida. Remember, we're cowboys out here. So there's never been a really good ruling. Now, there's been some rulings that basically say that if the company went out of business, it took MERS's appointment with it.
Yeah, because my original was Flick Mortgage Investors. They closed in 2007. The MERS assignment to Bank of New York was in 2011.
Well, Bank of New York Mellon, is that a security or something?
Yeah, trust.
It's a trust? I bet you they can't even pass that then. You got to look at the PSA.
Yeah. I'm gonna pay for the securitization audit, but I was just trying to
get
figure
on
out
it.
MERS.
Ain't no but. You got to figure that one out, like now.
Yep.
No, I'm definitely gonna do it.
I'm telling you, it just won me a trial down south. It would have won me a trial down south.
Yeah.
So. All right.
So just call this stuff up for. Just call this stuff up for a hearing immediately, right?
Yeah, and get that decided already.
Okay. All right, cool. That's pretty much it.
All righty.
Good. Appreciate it. I'm gonna keep studying, and I'll get that securitization audit done immediately.
Keep your head up. That's right. Keep going.
Yep. Keep her going.
All right.
Thank you. Let's go to, and we're running down on time. We've got about 6 minutes here. Let's go to 561. You've been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
What's up, Bill Oliver Scooter, like a Jenny Ben?
Hello, 561. We're hearing something in the background.
Dave, just go to the next caller.
Yep, we're going to have to do that. 951. Come on. There we go. 951, you've been unmuted. Hello, 951. Talk to us or we're going to roll over you as well. Okay, we got to go on. We're going to go to 803.
Hello,
803. You've been. Go ahead.
Hello. Yeah. Yes, I have a question. So, I have some debt collectors calling me, and I want to know if I paid off a debt. Does it affect my right to sue them under the TCPA?
No.
Okay.
Do they have the right to call you?
No. Good point. Yeah. Okay.
No. Listen to what I said. Do they have the right to call you? That's a simple question. Yes or no?
No, they don't.
Okay. You've never given them your cell phone?
No.
Then that's it. You've answered your own question.
Okay. And my last question is, if I'm on the Do Not Call registry, does that help my case or does it have no effect?
Of course. Section C. Right, Dave? C5, is it?
That's C5.
Yeah.
Okay, so if I'm not...
47 U.S.C., Section 227, C5.
Okay. And if I'm not on it, I still have a case, and it's being on the list,
of course,
just makes it better. Okay, all right. All right, that's it. Thanks.
All righty. Thank you very much. Okay, we're going to go to somebody that's got nothing but a bunch of ones strung out here. 11111. You've been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Is that me?
If you've been unmuted, go for it.
Okay, I wasn't
running
sure.
Out of time.
Hello?
You're running out of time. Go ahead, please.
Okay. This is Christine from Ohio. I got a little disturbing thing going on. On January 24th, and I just wonder if you guys have ever run across this, I was getting phone calls from Northland Group, and I don't know if you've ever heard of them. Probably. They're annoying. I mean, they called my phone 2, 3, 4, 5 times a day. Okay? I got fed up with it. On January 24th, I picked up the phone, and lo and behold, someone was there this time. She asked for somebody that didn't live here, and I asked her why she was calling. She wouldn't tell me. She just asked if this was the number for that person. And I said, listen, I said, you know what? I said, I'm getting sick and tired of you calling me 5 and 6 times a day. Now, usually I don't do this, but, I mean, enough is enough. And she says, well, I'm sorry, ma'am. She says, we'll mark you down as the wrong number. And I said, too late. I said, you can't unring the bell. I said, you've already violated the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. I said, you will be getting something from me in the mail. Now, since I did that, I've been getting all kinds of phone calls from all kinds of states with numbers that you cannot call back. They're disconnected, and I'm just wondering, have you guys ever run into that? And could it be this here Northland Group doing this?
I have no idea.
Pardon?
How can we possibly know that?
I just wonder if anyone else has experienced that.
There could be no connection between them.
Okay.
Pure coincidence.
I'm thinking the same thing, but come on, after I told them that, that's when they started.
There's no way to know. Yeah.
Yeah, I've answered some when I'm by the phone and in the house, and it just clicks and they hang up. And then I'll call them back, and a lot of them, some of them first from a cell phone, and there's a voice message to leave a message. And then some of them are a non-working number. Some of them don't even ring.
Well, there's nothing we can help you with on that.
Okay, so you've never experienced that, huh?
I get some odd calls like that as well. There's nothing you can do with them.
But until you prove who they are, it's no value whatsoever.
Yep.
But think about what you did. Yeah, you got upset at those calls, right?
Right.
Uh-huh. And you killed the goose that was laying the golden eggs.
I was about to get there. You voiced your dissatisfaction. You got it out of your system. And they're not calling you anymore. At least you can't prove that they're calling you anymore, and certainly not from that same number.
No, not from the same number. Yeah,
okay.
Exactly right.
How many calls did you miss, each of which might be worth, you know, a couple of $1,000 or more?
From Northland Group, you mean before I went off on him on the phone?
After you went off on them.
Yeah.
After I went off
since?
On them?
Yes.
I have two sheets of debt collector logs filled, and they're each 10 lines.
No, Christine. Christine.
Yeah.
Listen
Christine,
to my question.
Yeah.
Okay.
How many from Northland Group did you prevent from happening after you went off on them?
How many? They haven't called me back.
Okay.
That I know
so,
of.
Five a day times weeks, months, years?
Oh, you're asking me before I went off on them.
No.
Probably about 2 to 3 months.
No.
You're
very
not listening, Christine.
Yeah,
I'm
very
understanding them.
My language. I said after you went off on them, how many calls did you prevent them from making to you? The answer is you don't know, but it could be hundreds.
Right. That's true.
In other words, don't go jump on somebody. If they're calling you and they're making you money, be tolerant of it and think cha-ching every time the phone rings instead of getting angry. It's
you're
all
happy
about
when
your
they
mindset.
You.
Well, that's true, but they did what they did. Like you guys said, they can't unring the bell. They did harass me.
No, that's not a word. You don't ever use harassment because harassment lumps everything into one FDCPA count, and the judge will snatch on that. Do not use that word harassment ever in the lawsuit.
Okay.
Yeah. But the point is,
I know there's a FDCPA for it. I'm not sure which one it is and what it's stated, but
yes,
I mean,
but
for
Christine,
calling too. Go
Christine,
ahead,
Christine. When with FDCPA, you're only allowed $1,000 per lawsuit.
Right.
With TCPA, they're handing you bucket loads of money every day. Why do you want to shut that faucet off?
Well, this is my home phone, not my cell phone.
Okay.
And I did check the laws here in our federal courts, and there are none to cover home phones, landlines. I could not find any case law.
Well, the debt collectors, there is an exception for them to call landlines.
And the TCPA you're talking about?
Yes, yes, ma'am. We've talked about that a number of times. There is an FTC exception for debt collectors to call landlines.
Yep.
Okay, that's if they're calling from an automatic dialer. Is that what it is?
They're calling anywhere. It doesn't matter.
Whether they're using automatic dialer or not, there is an exception they can call. We talked about that a number of times.
Yep.
Oh, you said that they can call.
Can they?
Yes.
They are allowed to call. Yes, there's an exception to the prohibition on it. So yes, they can call. So you don't have a violation on landline.
No, not through the TCPA, right?
Right. That's
yeah,
correct.
I read up on that. Yeah. I realize that, but I do have the fair debt violation of them calling me 5-6 times a day for several months.
But it's only $1,000. It doesn't. They can violate 1,000 times. You can't stack under FDCPA.
Yeah,
it's
I understand
numbers.
That.
Okay. That's all you got. You only had to have one.
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah. Okay.
But the thing is, they did it. They owe me, and I know what I did. Prevented them from calling back 5 and 6 times a day, which I got really sick and tired of it.
Well,
they were calling early in the morning.
Yeah, well, if I was in your position and they were doing that, I would have shut them off after I had a couple, three violations because that's all I needed to sue them for my $1,000. Because the rest of them, there was no violations, nothing you can collect on. So why put up with the harassment for more than a day or two?
Well,
here
that's
again,
what I
this
said.
Is all about understanding the statute completely and knowing exactly what is a violation and what is not, so that if you're not dealing with violations, why tolerate the crap? Shut it off.
Exactly. That's what I did. I knew I can only get 1,000 from them, and I can get them for the state either. Go ahead.
Yep.
So that's why
I
shut them
down. I think that was just inadvertent noise. Yeah. Okay. You got anything else? Because we got to wrap things up here.
No, I don't. Thanks a lot,
all
guys.
Righty. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. That's going to call it for tonight. We're a little past the top of the hour. Don't forget, on Wednesday, we have a webinar, 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon Eastern. I'm going to be doing a webinar on conducting yourself in court. It's the part one of going to be a series of webinars on actually standing in the courtroom and things that you are going to need to know to do, whether you're in a federal courtroom or a state courtroom. And that's something where there's a lot of knowledge that people don't have that you can gain. So that'll be a very valuable webinar series to help people. Then, of course, tomorrow night, there's Terry's Call. That starts at 8 o'clock Eastern. If you are not on Terry's mailing list, please send an email tonight. Don't wait. Send it to queensongbird@gmail.com. Simply say, I'd like to be in the list. She'll get you on there, send you the call reminder. Don't wait until an hour before the call tomorrow and think that you're going to get a response, because you probably won't. Be courteous. Give her plenty of advance notice. Then, of course, on Monday nights, we've got Dallas Debt Discussion. That starts at 9 o'clock Eastern. That is still on TalkShoe, as it's been for almost 5 years. The PIN number is 54318. And, again, that starts at 9 o'clock Eastern. So there's lots of support out there, but as I always say, these calls are not a substitute for being a member of the site. These are meant to help you put the pieces of the puzzle together that are in the website with the complete information. When you're a member, you have the forum. You have all sorts of things at your disposal. You can ask questions, get quicker answers, and you got 3 years plus worth of information that's gathered there. And it's a small price to pay, $99 first month, $49 after that. No commitments, and there's a 60-day money-back guarantee. Try it, and if for whatever reason you don't like it, you can say, I want my money back. You get it. There's no squabbles. So get in there, become a member, get all of the information you need instead of the scattered bits and pieces. Jesse, I think we are done for tonight. You got any last comments?
I think you are. Yeah. No, just God bless everybody. Have a great week. And we will talk to you tomorrow, most of you anyway. That's it. Thank you for joining us.
All righty.
Good night.
Good night,
good night, everyone.
Terry, I got your email. You're good.
Good night.
Thanks.